Hello and welcome to In The Frame. Today's guest is Jordan Shaw. Jordan was recently touring the world as Simba in the international tour of The Lion King. Jordan has been in so many shows over the years. His West End credits include Miss Saigon, Motown and Cats, with his other credits including The Scottsboro Boys at the Young Vic. He was in both Follies and Hadestown at the National, and he did Tick Tick Boom at the Park Theatre. We recorded this interview quite a while ago now. It was a couple of weeks before lockdown. Jordan is actually supposed to be in Wuhan right now, finishing The Lion King, but obviously that run was cancelled, sadly bringing his time in The Lion King to a slight premature end. We discussed lots of things, including why playing Simba was such a big deal for him and such a big moment in his career. We discussed how he got into the industry, the decisions he's had to make along the way, as well as some of his stagey obsessions. Yes, things got a little bit stagey towards the end. Jordan was so lovely to chat to. We had a lot of fun recording this. Here is the interview. Jordan Shaw, you're in the frame.
Oh my god. When you say in the frame, am I stood in the frame or is my face in the frame?
Well, I think for podcasting sake, it's like a metaphorical frame.
Okay, there is going to be
a lovely picture on Spotify of you with a lovely like frame around you.
Okay, yeah.
So you are literally in a frame, which is very exciting.
Awesome.
So you're just kind of back from Lion King land. How long were you doing Lion King for?
A year.
And you were all over the place.
All over the place around Southeast Asia. Started out in South Korea, in Seoul and Busan. Then we went to Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Bangkok and then Hong Kong. And then we were meant to go to Wuhan.
Yeah, so this is where we're at. So you were supposed to be there now.
Doing the show literally right now. I'm sure many people hadn't heard of Wuhan until the news put it on the map. There's some market or something where people are eating bats or I don't know. But yeah, apparently coronavirus started in a market somewhere. And we found out when we were in Hong Kong, we were all like, I don't think we're going to go. And it just got worse and worse and worse.
So you kind of had a break in between kind of Hong Kong going that. So did you kind of say goodbyes?
No, that's the saddest part about it. I was just, and the worst part was towards the end of Hong Kong, my knee, I had a bad knee injury. Mm-hmm. Originally, it was just patella tendonitis, which was just swelling. And then I got called into hospital and they said, oh, you've like torn your tendon here, here, and here. If you keep doing the show, you may end up needing surgery. So we're going to, and I found out, I literally was called in on a Tuesday morning and they put me on a flight the Tuesday night. So I had to like go to my dressing room, grab my stuff, and literally walk out whilst the show was on. I like ran into the wings to say goodbye to my Nala just as she came off from singing Shadowland. And then I was in a taxi, went on my flight home. So I actually don't remember my last show. It was sad, right? And then I was just back here. My phone went off. It was an email. It just said, okay, we're not going to Wuhan. So I was like, oh.
That's sad.
Yeah, because I'd worked my whole life to kind of play that role. That was everything for me, and then suddenly it starts. But who knows? I might be back one day.
Let's hope that your kind of Simba journey isn't over. Yeah. So, was this international tour? Yeah. So, where was everyone else in the cast from? Were there other Brits on the tour?
Yeah, there were a few other Brits. It was like a really big mixture of people, Brits, Australians, majority from South Africa.
Wow.
Which was really cool because, you know, like the language in the show, it was just so authentic. And that sound is just, it blows you away. Like the way these people sing, and it's raw, natural. Mm. A lot of them are untrained and it just has this power behind it. I would like, after a warm up, sometimes they'll do like a little vocal call and I'll just be like lingering around. Like, I haven't heard this a million times, but I would have just listened one more time. It was a really big mixture of people. So I think that was a huge thing because I'd been used to working with West End folk all my life. So suddenly you had to like learn about other people's culture, you know, certain things that you probably couldn't joke about. And, you know,
yeah,
you had to be really careful. But after a while, you got used to it.
That's an incredible experience to be part of a company like that. Mm. So tell me about your personal relationship with The Lion King. So you said that that's a role you always wanted to do. And yeah. This was your first like big like commercial leading role. Yeah. So when did you first see the show, or when did you first kind of realise that it was a role you wanted to play? How long ago did the show come into your life?
So when I was really young, I'd seen a couple of shows with my family, but Lion King was probably the first show that I saw when I was of an age where I was like, I was in secondary school. I want to say like year 7 or year 8. Mm-hmm. And I was of an age where I was like, okay, this is really what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I understand theatre now. And so when I went to watch Lion King, it was just blew me away. And it was one of the first shows where I was like, I could be a part of this. So throughout all of my training, it was just that sort of that beacon of hope, of just discipline and having to push myself because one day I could play that
and
role.
Had you like been in for it before? And you hear people kind of going
for
their dream
yeah.
show.
There's
like
a story behind that. Yeah.
Tell me the story.
So, well, when I was going to, I grew up in Hertfordshire and I was going to the Brit School, which was in South London. Mm-hmm. So I'd get up at 5:30 every morning and I would get on the tube and I would see this poster of this guy like ripped and like with his mask on his head. And I was like, I want to be that. It was sort of like this everyday reminder of like, yeah, go to school and train hard. So when I was at Brit School, in my second year, I remember seeing this, this post, I think it was on the stage for an open call. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to go in for this. Like, imagine if I got the Lion King, I would leave Brit School. And I shouldn't be saying this right now. And it was an open call in the day. So I actually called in sick. I know I shouldn't be saying this, but it was a long time ago. I called in sick and I queued up around the block of the Lyceum Theatre. And I remember just sort of humming to myself, trying to warm up my voice. It was the first thing in the morning. It was freezing cold. And went in. We had to sing 16 bars, and then they were just like, how old are you? And I was like, oh, I must have been like 16. And they were like, oh yeah, you're just a bit, you know, go and train and come back. Because when I think back now and I look at the casting, I was a bit too old for young mm-hmm. Simbas, and I was a bit too young for like the actual cast, the ensemble. So I understand why, and I was probably very bad. I was way too fresh. So yeah, after that I was like, okay, no, they seemed interested in me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I need to go and train. So went to the Brit School went to Arts Ed. And when I left Arts Ed, it was one of the first things that I was auditioning for. And I went in, and I remember they called me in for cover Simba, and I think it was like Banzai material. And Endless Night for me was one of those songs that is just, it was so hard for me back then. I just didn't have the vocal stamina. I could get the range out, but mm-hmm. getting through to the end of the song was like, let's hope and pray. And I remember it was a really early auditioning, must have been like 10:30 or something. And I woke up.
That shouldn't be allowed.
Oh, it's just, why? Who wants to even talk at that time? and I went for like, I remember I went for a run. I was doing a vocal warm up in the morning and I got there and I was singing this song. And towards the end, I was like, this isn't going to work. And I remember there was like, it was one of those audition rooms that was so echoey. And there was like 4 or 5 people outside. Oh. And in the last few bars, like the last 16 bars was just like,
oh no.
And I was like, oh, I didn't
worst.
Get that.
And everyone outside the room could hear, and like, you had to walk out
and like, it was heads just down, just like... So that was another moment of inspiration. I was like, I've got to go and train my voice. Yeah, I've been at Arts Ed and I've improved a lot, but I want to be a leading man. Mm-hmm. So I paid an absolute fortune for singing lessons.
Yeah.
And I was going like every week and my voice really improved. And around that time, I was doing Miss Saigon and I was 10:01 in Miss Saigon, so I was able to kind of like implement the training each night. And yeah, that's sort of where my voice really started to get better. And by the time I actually did go back in for Simba, I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this now.
Yeah. And then full circle moment, and it happened. And see, and that's incredible, because then that's how it's kind of meant to be, right?
Yeah.
Rather than you got to work.
Exactly, yeah, because once I got it, I appreciate it so much. I remember the first show that I did, and I was just up at the top of that rock, and I was just crying, because it was like, yeah, like I felt like I really deserved it. I'd worked so hard. I'd gone from just wanting to be a part of the ensemble, like put my foot in the door, to playing Simba.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
That's a big moment in your career.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then what was it like to then sustain that for a year? Because that's a lot of shows and a lot of places and different theatres, and it is a tough role to be doing. It's physically demanding, right? And
really, you're
well, we were in all these different hotel rooms in these different countries, where you don't have your support network around you and your normal bed sheets.
Yeah, you're literally answering the question. That's literally, thank you. That's literally what it is. Like, I'd been in the ensemble. That was where I was so comfortable, and I knew how to do that, and I knew how to get through 8 shows a week. And suddenly it was like, you're a lead now, and you've got to try and be this robot of perfection every single night. And that's really unhealthy, because you get into your head like, I want to sing that song exactly like I did 8 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I do get in my own head. So when I first started, it was like, I would love to come out for drinks and get to know you all, but I need to sleep. And I also need to steam. And I'm not going to come for dinner after work, because that would give me acid reflux. And I need to be able to sing in the morning. And it was just...
And previously, when you were in ensembles and understudying, were you the person who was going out after the show and
stuff? I could, because I just knew I could...
So that's like part of your personality.
I love socialising. And I think the best thing about what we do is the community, and having maybe this one-year or two-year contract when you just become a family. And I love that. And I had to kind of sacrifice all of that. And I wasn't angry about it. I was like, no, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Precisely that. It was the change of climate. You know, when we first started in Seoul, there was this bridge that we would drive over in South Korea, and you could see the smog. The colour of the air was literally yellow. It was affecting everyone. Everyone was getting sick. Some people were being sent home, like literally losing their jobs, because they were just coming down with bronchitis and all these different things. And it was a constant constant maintenance of looking after yourself, making sure you're fully warmed up, looking after your body. I came down with an injury on my knee fairly early, which is a common thing with Lion King, just because the stage is still. Sim does a lot of jumps. So, yeah, it was exhausting.
And you're, like, half naked on stage.
Half naked, so you've got to be going to the gym as well all the time. But, yeah, it was rewarding when you're actually out there and you're doing a good job. And I was getting through 8 shows a week, and I was like, I can do this. I'm actually not going off. And people were... That old school discipline was like a huge thing for me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in the company were really supportive. Like, Jordan, you're not going off. Like, take a rest. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. And I'm like, I know when I need to rest. Like, I know when I can't. And that's literally when I'm hobbling on stage, or when I can't sing. And I didn't get to that point. So.
And how did you find all, so I bet you had to do lots of press stuff
talking
to crazy journalists, and like international press can be crazy.
Yeah, really, really huge thing, because you go to these cities and you're the like, one show.
Yeah, so you're like a celebrity.
Yeah, yeah, literally. And before we would go to each city, we would have these sort of press calls. So when I left South Korea, and we had a small gap between... No, but sorry, still in South Korea, between Seoul and Busan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a few weeks. They were like, okay, we're going to do a press tour. We're going to fly you from South Korea, and we're going to go to Taiwan. And you're going to spend like 2 days just sat doing these interviews and talking and performing. And then we're going to fly you from Taiwan to Bangkok. And you're going to do the exact same thing. And then we're going to fly you from Bangkok to Busan. And you're going to do the exact same thing. And then you'll do shows. And it was just... I felt like Beyonce. I was honestly like...
just hotel, bag, suitcase, another train, another plane, taxi, bus. Like, and it wasn't like we would just be sat in one place and they'd come to us. It was like, this radio station, that television program, da-da-da-da-da.
And it was like, what happened to, like, musical theatre? We were just the underdog of culture. And, you know, it's like suddenly you feel like you're promoting this huge movie.
And that is exhausting.
Exhausting, but fun.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, when you're a kid and you feel like, oh, I want to feel special. And, you know, it was that. But after a while, yeah, we'd done tours like that a few times. Like when we had to do it in Hong Kong, like just flew us out and it was just huge. It was just crazy. And yeah, you do get a bit like, hey.
Like I've gone in as a journalist and done interviews in those scenarios when you know someone's been doing like back-to-back interviews since 10 a.m. that day and it's like 3 p.m. and you're going in and you're like, they've answered, everyone's asking the same questions.
Same questions, that's it.
And they've answered the same answers and you just kind of feel really sorry for them and you just try and be as like nice as possible.
Yeah. That was the fun part. It was like, here's this question again. How can we switch this up and make this more interesting? And I'd be sat next to Amanda Kuneni, my Nala, and that question would come up and we'd look at each other like, you take this one, I want to hear how you do.
And then tell me about touring. So I know you were busy and you were being good, but did you get to go out and explore any places? Like what jumps out to you when you look back now?
Yeah, I mean, what I would do is I would kind of get towards the end of each venue and be like, okay, here's my one Monday that I probably would spend resting, but we're going to just cram it all in.
Get some Instagram content.
Yeah, exactly. So we would just like hire a bus and be like, take us everywhere.
Wow.
Like a little minivan. And then we would just, because there was always like a few of us that were like just trying to rest up, and we'd get like a little minivan, just drive around. And that was the coolest part, because you kind of, you're in these countries that have this, like, the most beautiful landscapes. And one minute you're in the city, and next you're, like, on a mountaintop, like, looking across this huge landscape. And it's just, a lot of breathtaking moments.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, let's rewind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the beginning.
Oh, wow.
So, you were talking before about how you were kind of, like, secondary school starting out when you were like, I want to do this properly.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started going to Brit School?
I was 16.
So kind of what happened between kind of you being like, all right, I want to do this, then actually kind of going to Brit School? Because it's a big commitment, right?
Yeah,
your family have to be on board. And once you decided, was that it? Was it where you're like, right, this is what I want to do?
It was a weird sort of journey. Well, I started training when I was six. Yeah.
What were you doing?
I was at just a sort of local drama school called Ridgeway Studios in Cuffley, in Hertfordshire.
Shout out,
Ridgeway. They're still going. And I just loved it. I didn't see it as musical theatre. I saw it as performing arts, like singing, acting, dancing, because the classes were separate. I loved it. My friends were playing out at the weekends, and I was like, Saturday morning, out of bed. Like, I was not a morning person, but Saturday morning, I was just like, let's go.
Best day of the week.
Yeah, and I was there for a while, and when I went to secondary school, my dad told me, because he had some friends that were in the industry, he was like, oh, have you heard of Sylvie Young's? And I decided that I wanted to go there, because I just felt like I wanted to, like, push myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like, at such a young age, I was like, I want like harder training. That's literally who I was.
That's
my,
good.
My parents weren't very pushy. They were just like, oh, if you want to do it, you can do it. And
that's good that your dad had heard of that.
Yeah, it was like, I wouldn't have known about it.
They're not trying to discourage you from doing it.
Yeah. I went to Sylvia Young's. And when I was at Sylvia's, I started doing like, I was just at the Saturday school.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing like a few little TV and film bits and bobs. Like, my first ever...
What did you do?
Okay, so here we go.
Child star. Sure.
My first ever job was, like, a small little moment in Batman Begins.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's big time.
I know, which isn't very good for a child of that age. Because I was... It was the summer between year 6 and year 7. And suddenly I was being picked up in this Mercedes and chauffeured to Pinewood and had my own trailer and they were bringing me food and makeup.
Oh my God.
It was like, if you watch, it's just like a close-up, then it's on Christian Bale, then a close-up again. It's like this moment where he sits down and like hands me a plum. Like, he goes to steal it and it's like, he's about to eat the plum, but then he sees this, quote, African boy in rags. That's what comes up on the credits. And African boy in rags. And he sees me and gives me the plum. I have a bite. And then I think I give it back to him. And that's it. But yeah, that was my first ever job. And then, yeah, I did a few other bits and bobs, like CITV and, like, The Bill and, you know, like Harry Potter, the usual sort of stuff. But quite a few commercials.
Yeah. But not everyone who then does that as a child or as a young person then goes on to pursue it professionally or ends up doing it professionally.
Well, what it did is it made me go, I'm bored. I don't really like TV and film. At that age, I was it was just, you sit in this bus all day and you just like, it just, it was slow. There was a lot of waiting around. It didn't feel very like exciting. And because I'd done like things with my schools when I was younger, it was like, no, I want to be on stage. I
like give me that applause.
Yeah.
Give that live
the thrill
buzz,
of live. Yeah. So I carried on my training throughout Sylvia's, and that's when I started to go, you know what, I think I really want to do musical theatre. I started to see more shows, and I was really inspired. So towards the end of secondary school, everyone was talking about sixth form and stuff, and I was looking around at all these different schools that I wanted to go to, and a lot of them were really, really expensive. And my parents were like, you know, it would be hard, but we would try and we'd see what we can do, you know. But then I heard about this school called the Brit School, which was the only free school in the country. So I was like, well, let me apply to go there. You know, there's some really cool people that have been there, and I'd kind of heard of it before. So yeah, I auditioned for the Brit School and I got in. And honestly, it was the best 2 years of my life. That's what really made me go, okay, this is what I want to do. Because I was around like-minded people. All this time I'd been around people that enjoyed singing, acting, dancing, but not necessarily musical theatre. And suddenly I was meeting these awesome people like Lizzie Connolly and becoming best friends with her. And she was like,
Lizzie Connolly.
Oh, she's just like the most incredible person.
She
and
is.
She really opened my eyes. She was like a force of nature. She was like, this is where I want to go, this is the shows I want to do, this is like, she was prepared.
Yes,
and she just really opened my eyes to like, okay, I'm gonna follow this girl, because she knows what she's the first person that introduced me to Arts Ed.
Wow.
She was like, oh, we were finishing school, and she was like, oh, I'm gonna go see the Arts Ed third year show, they're doing Anything Goes, you want to come with me? I was like, yeah, sure. Went along and I was like, oh my gosh, this was like a full of West End show, like the quality of talent. And that's when I was like, okay, this school's epic.
Hang on, pause for a second.
Let's go.
Had you done, so you're doing like your Saturday performing arts, but were you doing like proper dance training? Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, so you're doing like your tap and your ballet.
Yeah. So I was doing, from the age of six, I was doing like jazz and tap.
Because I'm like, I've seen you, you're an incredible dancer.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was doing like tap and jazz. I was doing tap like after school, a lot of jazz, like a lot of commercial as well, and yeah, just a lot of hours. I think dance was the one that I probably enjoyed the most, because I had such a fast progression. I was like, oh, I'm good at this. It was the first thing that I was like, okay, I know that I can, I excel at this. So, yeah, Sylvia Young's on a Saturday, I would get there at like 10:30. I would leave at 6:30. It was just back-to-back classes.
So it was intense training.
Yeah, really intense, but I loved it.
Okay, let's fast forward back forward.
Okay, yeah.
Just do that. I was like, hang on a second.
Yeah,
don't tell me you started dancing at like 16.
No.
Everyone's going to hate you.
No. I was an early start, yeah.
So then you look around Arts Ed, and did you get in first time?
Yeah, I did. And, I sound like a psycho, but I was at Brit School, and I was like, Arts Ed, I did so much research, and I was like, Arts Ed is the only school I want to go to. So I only sent off one application form.
Wow.
I didn't audition anywhere else. I did it really early. I don't want to sound too arrogant. I did really early because I thought, if I don't get in, then I would maybe audition at, say, Lanes. But yeah, I auditioned, and yeah, I was very lucky. I got a scholarship. I got a Dada.
Wow.
So yeah, I just knew from very early at Brit School that that's where I was going to go.
We were just talking earlier about, you know, your singing and stuff, how you knew you could have had, like, work to do and you've worked really hard at it. But when you're kind of, when you were coming out of drama school, did Jordan then kind of know that? Or were you kind of, what I'm trying to ask is, when you were leaving drama school, like, where was your mind at? What were your dreams then? Did you want to be playing leading roles, or did you want to be just in any show doing anything?
I just wanted to do a show. I thought one day, hopefully, I'd be able to play a lead. But I just wanted to do whatever. Well, I just wanted to be on stage. Mm-hmm. Ensemble wasn't something. There was a couple of people in the show, in my year that were like, oh, no, I want to be a lead. I'm just leaving drama school. And I was like, you know, you got to learn. Like, there's stuff that you need to...
People
you need to meet. And there's stuff that you won't learn at drama school that you learn from standing in the wings. Mm-hmm. You learn in the rehearsal studio. And I was lucky to be in the ensemble, but be amongst really incredible talent, like Olivia Award nominated talent, where I would just sit there at the front of a rehearsal studio and I would just be like, I want to do that. I'm going to take that. I'm going to steal that. These are all the things that I was kind of putting into my basket to try and hopefully...
What was your first job out of drama school?
The Scots for Boys.
At the Young Vic.
Yes.
And that was, I mean, an incredible production.
Yeah, it was just...
Did that, like, whip you into shape?
Oh, gosh, like, beyond.
Because that was an intense show to perform.
Yeah,
like...
and I was a swing and dance captain. So it was... So that meant that I barely left the theatre. I was always there. It was just intense because not only... And the thing is, I call it a swing, but really it was a cover. All of those boys had their own lines, their own songs, their own movement. So I had to cover four of those roles, and I went on for three of them. At one point, I was on for one of the roles for 2 weeks. One guy came down really sick. And on top of that, I was in rehearsals in the day, rehearsing myself and the other cover and all the other covers. So I had to teach choreography that I'd pretty much just learned.
That's a big deal to be doing that as your first job, right? That's a lot of responsibility to take on.
But we had Susan Stroman, who was in the studio. Yeah. And when you're among someone like her, you're just like, there ain't no moaning. Like, you are in front of Susan Stroman herself, and she has just come up to you and said, would you be my dance captain? The associate choreographer left to New York after previews, so it was just me. I had to keep that show clean, and I loved it. It was great because I just come from arts ed that was so intense, and I was used to being intense. Yeah. I was used to that hard work. So
I'm sure where your mind was at.
It was... Like I said, just the talent that was around, half the cast were from Broadway and they'd done the show before. So it was just full speed ahead, just like work and learn.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4/6 Success Filmmaking. 4/6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4/6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
And then you seem to just kind of jump from job to job. So it was like Saigon and Motown and just lots of shows with amazing people. And Cats, of course. Cats was the next one, right?
Cats was after Miss Saigon, yeah. Cats was like one of those shows as training as a dancer. It's like that was...
The ultimate test.
I'd be in class and be like, push yourself because you never do Cats. That was like this thing that I would tell myself. So when the audition came round, I went like crazy. I was like... If I don't get this, I had full on like anxiety, like my stomach was messed up, like because in my head I was like, oh, you've trained so hard at dance. It's such an unhealthy thing to tell yourself. But I was like, if I don't get this, then like this is that moment that you've been waiting for. So yeah, getting Cats was a huge thing for me. Doing it at the Palladium as well. I've never cried whilst dancing. And on that last show, I was doing the Jellicle Ball. Crying. It was that's the most musical theatre thing I could ever say.
I cried during the Jellicle Ball. Own it. You take that. I'm you take those it. Tears.
Yeah.
Leave them on the Palladium stage forevermore. So how do you, first question, how do you kind of deal with the kind of the craziness of this industry, so the rejection and the intensity of it all? Because you have literally kind of jumped from these crazy jobs to crazy jobs. Mm. Imagine you actually haven't had that much time to stop and digest things. Because people say, don't they, you know, everyone strives to kind of be that person who is jumping like that. Mm. But it's amazing. It's what everyone strives towards. But then it's actually not the easiest thing to do because it's like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Have you got better at it? Have you like found a way of kind of keeping yourself sane and of, you know, looking after yourself? What do you do?
Yeah, well, it was the year after I did Follies. That's when I decided I really want to be a lead.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of...
What? Why? What happened?
Well, I loved doing Follies. I loved it. And I was around, it was the older ladies of the cast, and they would sit and they would talk about their experiences and the things that they wished they'd done, the things that they'd missed out on.
Wow.
And they would tell all these incredible stories, and they would talk about, you know, walking the West End in the early 80s and the late 70s. And it just made me go, okay, if you're going to do this, you just go for it. And I called my agent and I said, I don't want to go in for any ensemble. I only want to go up for leads. And it was a point in my career where casting directors was starting to take me a bit more seriously. I was no longer just being called for cover. I was actually going up for the lead.
People kind of knew who you were.
Yeah, yeah. And boy, was that a hard year. It was the most... probably one the toughest year of my life, because I had jumped from job to job, and suddenly it just stopped, and you were getting no, or you'd get down to the final and you'd be told, oh, you know, it's yours, and then the person who played the role before might just decide that they want to do it again, or they'd send the tapes off to America, and even though the creative team in the UK were like, yeah, we love you, the big choreographer, Jerry Mitchell, would say, no, like, we want to go with him, you know? And that's just how it goes. But I think the thing that got me through was my friends, because we'd all faced that rejection, and it was just like... when I would hear a no, the first thing I would probably do is just call my best friend, like Idris Cargbo. He was just my rock through it all. I would just call him and we would cry and just like, just get out. You just got to get out of your system. You got to remind yourself that half of what we do is the rejection. Half of being, as much as it is being on stage and performing, as much you have to be auditioning. That's the job, putting yourself in that studio and being vulnerable.
Mm.
And then and part of that job is trying to pick yourself up. You've got to be your number one cheerleader, because nobody else is going to do it for you. You've got to remind yourself why you're passionate about it, why you love it. Sometimes I'll just sit there and I'll just search my favorite videos on YouTube just to go like, okay, this is... remember when you used to watch that when you were 13 and it made you feel like this? Like, keep pushing yourself. Because, you know, it's the people that quit that they never know what could have happened. Mm. And it's funny, I'd said to myself, okay, I'm going to do this in 2018. If I cannot get a leading man role in 2018, then that means that it's not a healthy thing to tell yourself. But I was like, if I can't do it in this year, then maybe I'm just not cut out for it. And I'll go back to the ensemble, or I might look at doing something else, because I want to be consistent.
Yeah.
I felt like if I gave myself a year, then if I can do it in that year, then maybe I can, once I leave that job, then I can do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd got to the finals for these things, or I didn't get to the finals for these things, and I was getting cut and cut and cut. And it was the end of 2018. I was just, I took Hadestown because it's Hadestown, and it was at the National, and I really wanted to do it. But it did, again, whilst I was doing it, I was like, I love this, but it reminds me that I do want to play a lead. And I was auditioning for Lion King, and by this point, I was exhausted. I'd gone in for so many shows, and I just kind of walked in. That was my stomach. I kind of walked in holding I was holding the sheets, which I would never do. I'd be off book for everything. And I was just like, you know what? I was just exhausted. I didn't walk in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I just went in like, you know, let's just see how this goes. Mm-hmm. And I was getting through a few more rounds and I did the finals. And still, like, my friends were like, oh, when are you going to hear? And I was just like, guys, you know, don't. Like, I don't even want you to ask me right now. And one night, it's so crazy. One night, I was trying to get to sleep. I had so much anxiety. I just could not sleep. And I was just laying there thinking, okay, this is the last shot. New Year's Eve is around the corner. And, like, what else are you going to do? I said, you don't really want to do ensemble anymore. I was thinking about interior design. I was thinking about, I was doing some gigs with my band. We do like function stuff. I was like, some of the guys in that band, like they do it full time. They make a really good living. And I love it. I get to sing all the time. And maybe I could do that for a while or go back to school. And I was just laying there thinking all these things. And I always go to sleep with my phone on sleep mode so no one can interrupt me. And I woke up with my iPad going off. My phone going off, everything was just, I was like, jumped out of bed, and it was my agent on the phone, and I was like, okay, what's wrong? Because when he calls on his mobile, it's like, you've got this, or you've got to do this, or some, it's either you got a job, or you may be in trouble. And he was like, you sat down? I was like, yeah, what's up? He's like, you got Lion King, you got Simba. I was just like, oh. It was just weird, because the night before, I was thinking of giving up. Yeah. And it just made me go, you know what? Never, ever give up on yourself. Mm. Never, because it might just be that last hurdle that you want to stop and you don't want to jump over it and you just want to quit. And that might just be that last hurdle that, you know.
Oh, Jordan. Come here. Oh. I'm like tearing up.
Oh, yeah. That's it. You know, that's our industry. That's literally what it is.
What I take away from everything you said is how much you love it and how much you loved it. Because actually, over the years, we've bumped into each other at the theatre, haven't we?
That's, yeah,
just,
so many times.
We just like say, we like sat at the Open Air Theatre, and the Miniature Chocolate Factory. We're like, oh,
yeah. Hey.
So you, because some people, they're like not in a show, they're not doing something, then they kind of, you know, they want to be as far away from a theatre as possible. And I do get that. But I love that you clearly love it you love that world and you idolise the people and you want to be in part of that. I think there's a lot to be said for that, right? Because ultimately, you want to be doing something, no matter what it is. You know what industry it is. You want to be doing something you love.
Yeah. And that's what I have to remind myself of all the time.
Yeah.
Because, it can get tiring and you're going on stage and you're sick and your body aches and stuff. But you got to go, who's that child that was doing this for free and doing it as a hobby? And
you would have paid, like, 16-year-old, you would have paid to be...
Exactly, in, like, you're paying your fees, whatever, like, to be a part of, like, a panto. You know, you're literally paying to be in this panto and you're not getting paid. Like, you got to remind yourself of that, you know? So, and that's what pushes me through.
And what's also interesting about your career is, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but because, you know, some people will get a show and they'll stay in that show for a long time. Mm. You've kind of always, like, taken that risk, right? After a year, at the end, you haven't done anything for a long time. And it's almost like, so has there been more kind of strategic stuff that's played a part in, you know, accepting? I'm sure you've had times you had, like, maybe like multiple jobs on the line or not taking something to free you up something else. How do you find that kind of, not game, but that kind of, like, way of forming what you do and what you accept?
I've been very lucky because not everybody has that sort of mindset.
Yeah.
And I completely understand why. Some people, they want to be in a show and they want to make their money and they want to sit on that show till that show closes. And there's been a few shows that I've left where I've been thinking, oh, I'm enjoying this so much. But I know that I want to push myself. I know that there's probably something out there that will teach me this or teach me that, or I'll get to meet that person. And the only way you're going to do that is by leaving. It's a constant game of cards because you just don't know what way it's going to go. I haven't always left with something to go on to. There's sometimes been like a short break. But yeah, that is part of it. When I left Motown, that was the hardest for me because I was not ready. I loved that show so much. I loved the people, the cast, the show. Like, it was just, I learned so much. I had to get out. And every show that I've done, I've gone, oh, okay, yeah, I learned that for a reason. Or I met that person for a reason. So every time I've left, it has been hard, but I remind myself of why I left previous shows and how that benefited me as well.
And now you're back in the game. I'm sure in for lots of stuff. So what, like looking ahead, like now you've done this year of doing Simba, like what gets you excited? Like what's the kind of like the goal for 2020?
I learned so much from doing Simba. Yeah. I learned so much. And now I'm like, okay, I can play a lead role 8 shows a week. I can do this. So now I'm back. It's just made me even more strategic about what it is that I want to do. I have to be really careful because the one thing with playing a lead is, yeah, it's great, but it you can be pushed to that limit where you're like, I don't know if I can do this. And you've got to want to be a part of something where you're inspired. So my agent has called about a few things and I've said, you know what, that's not really right for me. Or I'll read the script and I can't really see myself really being able to enjoy it. And yeah, it is risky. Maybe I'll get back to doing my day job soon and all of that. But like I said, it's part of it. Yeah, I just want to go in for things that I'm really excited about, and or there's still things on my bucket list. Mm-hmm. So if they call me about that, even it's like the most commercial West End show that's been going on for like 10, 12 years, I'm like, get me in that room right now. I want to audition for that. And who knows? It might be like 2018 again, where I don't work for the whole of this year. That's just how it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, let's hit stage you for a little bit. I want to know, what are these videos that you were watching on YouTube?
Oh, gosh. The most iconic ones.
Who are you obsessed? Yeah, what are you obsessed
okay,
with?
Okay, so...
Let's end on, like, a stagey note.
Okay, so what would I search? I would search Dance at the Gym, 2008 Tony Awards.
Oh.
That performance just makes me...
I haven't watched that for a while.
That's something about it that just makes me go... Because you just see the passion. It's just like... Everyone just going crazy. That something about that video just makes me go wild. Every Little Step documentary, the Chorus Line one.
Oh yeah.
Got like if I'm at a low moment, that was my 2018 documentary. Like when I'm like, I can't do it, because it was these kids that were just like teeth and nails. I would do anything.
It's emotional.
Yeah. Very emotional. What else would I search? Passion.
Oh, I don't know Passion.
Stephen Sondheim's Passion is my favourite musical. And you've got the whole thing on YouTube. Shouldn't we say that? But the whole thing. The Broadway production. The original Broadway production with Donna Murphy. Watch it.
Ugh. Donna Murphy's everything.
Oh my gosh. Her playing Fosca. I just can't. Like, I watch it and I'm just like, what? How are you this good? You're literally, like, you're beyond acting. You're that person. Like, it's just, like, I can watch that a million times. It's my favourite musical, so I watch that a lot.
Okay, so we need Passion to come back to London.
Oh, my gosh. Like, oh. I mean, I don't know if I would even want to be in it. I just want to watch it over and over again.
Just for, like, viewing reasons.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this.
It's been a pleasure.
I've just sat here and fallen in love with you.
Oh,
yay. 5 minutes.
Let's do dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a present for you.
You do?
Yeah, I can't not give you a
gift.
Oh,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Is it a mug?
How do you know?
I can see through. Oh, thank you.
I got a Western framework. Thank you so much for doing this. Good luck with everything.
Oh, thank you so much.
I want you to do liking over here so I can see you do it.
I would love to.
So let's make that happen. Yes. And I can't wait to see what's in store, what happens.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. You can follow Jordan on Instagram and Twitter at Jordan Shaw UK. Thank you so much again to Jordan for taking time out to record this episode. Once we are out of this crazy period, I can't wait to see what the future has in store for him. If you enjoyed this episode of In The Frame, it would be amazing if you could leave a little rating, maybe even write a little review. And make sure you check out our other podcast, The West End Frame Show. We'll be back in a few weeks to kick off Series 3, but in the meantime, there are plenty of old episodes for you to go and binge. You can find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'll be back next Friday for a very exciting episode. We have been holding on to this one for a while. I'll be chatting to Lauren Drew, who's been touring the UK as Catherine of Aragon in 6.